evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, July 23, 2019. Rebels of the National Salvation Front claim government soldiers attacked their positions.
Matianar forces combined with the bodyguards from the house of Jenis Waniga and some elements from Iro attacked our forces in Karpato. The motives of attack purposely we didn't know why they decided to come attack our forces.
And U.S. officials react to the Sudan peace agreement.
But there are still a lot of negotiations to be conducted on what the Sudanese are calling their constitutional declaration, which is a document that will be more detailed and will have to address what the functions of the different parts of the transitional government will be.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. As negotiations appear to stall between leaders in Sudan, the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan speaks about the latest and what role U.S. is playing to broker a peace in Sudan. Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Last week, Sudan's military rulers and opposition parties inked an agreement that outlined a three-year power-sharing government. But there's much, much more work to be done, says U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan, Donald Booth. Since being appointed to the post 6 weeks ago, Booth has shuttled between talks in Khartoum, Brussels, and Addis Ababa, where different sides are trying to present their concerns and visions for a new Sudan. In a conference call from Brussels on Tuesday, Booth pointed out that the agreement left key details to be negotiated.
We welcome the agreement on that, but there are still a lot of negotiations to be conducted on what the Sudanese are calling their constitutional declaration, which is a document that will be more detailed and we'll have to address what the functions of the different parts of the transitional government will be. And it's in that document where issues of relative roles and powers of the Sovereignty Council, the Prime Minister and the Cabinet, and ultimately of the Legislative Council will be addressed.
It has been an eventful 3 months since military authorities ousted and arrested longtime leader Omar al-Bashir. Protesters filled the streets to demand the transitional government be led by civilians. Talks began, but then stalled, over who would fill seats in a sovereign council meant to steer the transition. Then, on June 3rd, security forces killed at least 61 people who attended a sit-in at the defense ministry. The opposition claims that 128 people were killed. Booth put the figure at 150 deaths and says he is pressing leaders to conduct a credible investigation into the events of that day. Some analysts have expressed concerns that, in this tense environment, the political declaration may not hold for long. Chatham House researcher Ahmed Solomon says he's concerned that the current negotiations appear to focus on the who and not the what.
At the moment, we're seeing a lot of focus on representation, and maybe there is less focus on actually the governing and the policies that need to be carried forward. And you still have real fundamental issues in Sudan, you know, peace in the regions and with the armed groups, economic reform and the restructure of the economy, and particularly as well security sector reform, which will be a big challenge in the country and in the current context.
Booth urged the various parties to resolve the issues quickly so, in his words, the country can begin to address issues of reform and move forward to a better future. Booth did not reply to VOA's question on what the U.S. believes should happen to Bashir. In June, Sudan's public prosecutor charged him with corruption. Since 2009, he has been on the wanted list of the International Criminal Court on charges of crimes against humanity, war crimes, and genocide in Sudan's Darfur region. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The rebels of the National Salvation Front are accusing both the government and SPLA-IO forces of carrying out attack on their positions at Lobonok, 50 kilometers southwest of Juba town. The spokesman for the National Salvation Front, Samuel Soba, says their forces came under attack early this morning. Soba says South Sudan People's Defense Force and SPLA-IO forces attacked their positions 50 kilometers from Juba.
I think it was today at 7:30 in the morning. The forces of the Matianar forces combined with the bodyguards from the house of Jenis Waniga and some elements from Iro attacked our forces in Karpato. The motives of attack were purposely, we didn't know why they decided to come out as our forces, but probably we believe they're just trying to make a story upon the difficult situation which is going on as far as the peace is concerned and also the current situation in the country. So we decided to attack our forces. Our forces responded in self-defense, defeating them and sending them to run in disarray. And till this afternoon, we have been pursuing their forces.
Sobra says 8 government soldiers were killed and 3 AK-47 rifles recovered. South Sudan People's Defense Forces military spokesman Lul Roy Kwang denies the army carried out any attack on NAS rebels.
I'm not aware of any fighting in Lebanon.
The SPLA-IO deputy military spokesman Colonel Lam Gabriel says his forces are not engaged in any offensive against any hold-up groups like the National Salvation Front.
There is nothing like joint operations that we can do against the forces of Thomas Rilo. We know NAS is anti-peace element, and they have been so aggressive on our cooperation of late, especially this side of Lebanon. They attacked our forces about a month ago in around Caperto. So if they have been attacked, it is definitely not the SPLA-IO, because our forces are now moving from their current location to the cantonment site according to the agreement.
2 days ago, the Joint Defense Board issued an order for all the SPLA-IO forces to report to cantonment sites within a week, and the South Sudan People's Defense Forces should report to the barracks to abide by the 2018 peace deal security arrangement. There was a tight security today in Juba with several roadblocks where military personnel conduct checks on motorists during broad daylight, something that is usually done at night. Dimo Silva Aurelio prepared this report from Juba. An organization run by South Sudan's First Lady Ayin Mayar did has launched a campaign to help end early marriages. Government and UN officials say in order to end child marriages, leaders must enact and enforce laws that protect young girls. Manyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
25-year-old Cecilia Dao Kwol sits at the gate outside the First Lady's, feeding her one-month-old twins. Adao says she was 14 when she was forced to marry a 35-year-old man, and now she lives as a beggar. Speaking in Arabic, she says her heart is full of hatred toward those who forced her into marriage before she finished her studies.
If I were given a chance to be in school and continue my education, I wouldn't be suffering in the streets like this with my children. Because marrying very early is not good. Girls who are in school now should be encouraged to continue and not to be forced to marry.
Mary Otiano, the country representative for the United Nations Population Fund, was among several government and UN officials attending yesterday's launch of a campaign to end child marriages. Otiano says child marriage affects more than 40% of South Sudanese girls.
It is a gross human rights violation which constitutes a grave threat to young girls' lives, health, and future prospects, putting them at risk of violence, like they said in the play, poverty, HIV, and complications related to pregnancy and childbirth, which in developing countries like South Sudan are the main causes of death among 15 to 19-year-old girls.
South Sudan officials say they are stepping up efforts to discourage early child marriage and pregnancies. Speaking in Arabic, Juba City Mayor Samir Kamis says several hotel managers in Juba look the other way when they know men are breaking the law.
There are multi-practices going on in our hotels here in Juba. You find an elderly man going with a very young girl to the hotel. So we have issued an order to the hotel's management. If they see young girls 18 years and below, they should not allow them to enter. And the hotel management should notify security personnel immediately.
Manasseh Lomule, head of South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, points out that marrying a child below the age of 18 is a crime.
Giving our girls to old men of my age is a crime against humanity. I have hit my 60s And if I go and grab a girl of 18 or even 20 for a wife, I'm committing a crime. And I'm talking to the chief there. You have sharp appetite for young girls. Stop it. Stop it. And I know that not all of you are doing it, but some of you are doing it. This important program is educating all of us to ensure that our children are taken care of and are protected.
Speaking in Arabic, Paramount Chief Deng Macham, who attended the event, is sponsored by the First Ladies organization called Concerned South Sudan, says parents must teach their children about the dangers of early marriages and protect them.
In case a girl is impregnated by mistake, we must tell the mother and the father to let the girl go back to school.
Last year, the UN Population Fund launched a strategic national action plan to end early child marriage by 2030 in South Sudan by pushing lawmakers to enact stronger laws that protect girls, to severely punish the perpetrators of child marriages, and to advocate for girls' education. For VOA News, I am Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
Still in Juba, the wife of a South Sudanese journalist who has been detained for a week without being charged is calling on security agents to release him. The editor of the Arabic daily Al-Watan was detained on Wednesday. Michael Christopher's wife says the government has offered no explanation as to why her husband is being held at the National Security Headquarters. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Balita Rial, Michael Christopher's wife, says her husband is being detained at National Security Service Headquarters, the building known as Blue House. She says Christopher went to the headquarters on Wednesday, 2 days after security agents removed him from a plane bound for Kenya. She says when he went to collect his passport and ask why he was being prevented from traveling outside the country, he did not return home.
When he did not return home on Thursday, I visited him, and that is how I got to know he was detained. When I visited him, I was given access and met him. But since then, I did not see him again. Michael says he was only told to enter into a cell without any explanation to him. He even says he did not know why he is being detained, and there is no one who can tell us why he is being detained.
On Saturday, Rial says she visited her husband again but was denied access to him, and she has been prevented from communicating with Christopher since that time because his phone is switched off. Kong Pal Cheng, head of the South Sudan Editors Forum, says Christopher's case is concerning because he has not been charged with an offense but is still in detention. Cheng says the government should respect the language in the revitalized peace agreement regarding freedom of expression.
Like any other citizen in this country, Michael Christopher deserves a fair trial if he has done something. I think the government need to bring charges forward and bring him before the judge and let it be let him be taken to court and like any other person whom we see in the past period, where we have seen public figures taken to court and their sentence is announced to the public, and everybody knows what this person may have done.
On Sunday, Jehan Henry of Human Rights Watch issued a press release condemning Christopher's detention, stating the arbitrary detention of Michael Christopher is the latest brazen attack against the freedom of the press in South Sudan, and called for his immediate release. South Sudan in Focus contacted Elijah Allier, managing director of South Sudan Media Authority, who said he would comment on the case later. Cheng says the editors' forum tried to ascertain from the South Sudan Media Authority why Christopher is being detained.
What they told me is that what is holding Christopher in Blue House, the reason why Christopher is being held in Blue House is that is not anything related to his work. If it was something that related to his work, Media Authority themselves, they say they will be able there to intervene and address this issue like it happened to him.
The former Sudanese President Omar El-Bashir. The Media Authority wrote to Christopher warning him not to write about the protests in Sudan. Shortly afterwards, the Media Authority refused to renew his newspaper's license to operate in South Sudan. He fled to Cairo, citing death threats against him from unknown people, but later returned to his home country. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Thibault Nagy, the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Africa, says the United States and its trade partners in Africa are starting to think about new ways to expand trade between the U.S. and the African continent. Nagy and Constance Hamilton, the U.S. Trade Representative for Africa, today said the coming AGOA summit will focus on finding new ways to help the continent prosper. The African Growth and Opportunity Act, created 19 years ago to boost Africa's development and increase trade, expires in 2025. Hamilton told journalists on a telephone conference that the act has fallen short of its goals in some ways. For instance, she said the benefits have been shared unevenly among different countries.
Additionally, AGOA has not led to the trade diversification for which we originally hoped. Petroleum products continue to account for the largest portion of AGOA imports, with a 67% share. And the volume of AGOA trade remains modest. In the AGOA clothing sector, for example, we get about $1 billion per year from Africa, but that's just roughly 1% of the United States' $95 billion imports in global clothing imports.
Despite AGOA's flaws, Nagy stressed that AGOA and other U.S. programs such as Prosper Africa continue to focus on Africa's economic development.
And for providing jobs for what we have termed Africa's emerging youth tsunami. Because as we have said before, all those millions of young people, what they really want, what they really need are jobs, jobs, and good jobs.
To continue meeting those goals, they say discussions have begun on possible ways to replace AGOA. Hamilton said among the options are separate free trade agreements with different African nations or economic blocs.
The program is scheduled to expire. That's about 6 years. 6 years in trade terms is a nanosecond. That's going to go by really quickly. That's why we're starting the conversations now with our partners to talk about what comes next. We do think that a free trade area agreement builds on the success of AGOA.
The AGOA summit runs August 4th through to the 6th in Abidjan. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a critical shortage of HIV/AIDS drugs for Africa. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your golden rule in life?
My golden rule is never to give up, no matter what, whether it's on family challenges, money problems, work related, I just never give up.
Golden rule. No, I don't allow men to play with my life. That is my golden rule. And I don't allow anyone to talk ill about my parents and my family.
Put God first, because in everything you need God. And as you know, the fearing of God is the beginning of knowledge.
Not to lie. I always want to base my living, everything I do, my speaking, my saying, in facts and truth.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp.
Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday Health segment, and today we are talking about a shortage of HIV/AIDS drugs. 1.3 million Zimbabweans living with HIV/AIDS face a shortage of life-saving antiretroviral drugs after the government failed to raise adequate funds to access donor funding. Adi Gondo gives us more on the story from Harare.
A petition submitted to Parliament last week by the Zimbabwe AIDS Network revealed the government failed to meet its annual contribution of US $6 million to the Global Fund. The payment would enable Zimbabwe to access US $400 million from the International Health Fund to buy antiretroviral drugs. The Global Health Fund offers grants to countries to support programs providing HIV treatment. Signatory countries are obliged to contribute a percentage of the grant value as counterpart financing. A country that defaults in its obligations sees its grant reduced by 15%. As Zimbabwe is considered a low-income country, it is required to contribute 5% of the value of the total grant as counterpart financing spaced out over several years. Taura Nyandoro is the national coordinator for the Zimbabwe AIDS Network, representing over 200 organizations in the country. He explains why the organization petitioned Parliament.
So our petition was premised on the projected art gaps in Zimbabwe. So what has been happening is, you know, because now our money is in RTGS, so we cannot procure ARVs because our money is in RTGS. You know, we already received shipments for ARVs and then lab reagents. ICWA was going to pay for those services, but they didn't pay. So we accrued a debt of $6 million. So now we can't get fresh supplies of ARVs because we have not been able then to release or to find foreign currency.
NAC is the National AIDS Council, which administers the National AIDS Fund drawn from taxpayers. The fund collects 30 million RTGS dollars annually, but is being eroded by inflation and recent changes in monetary policy. Nyandoro says if the government does not meet its obligations, people on HIV drugs face a dire situation.
What will happen is we experience stockout. We call that stockout. So we run out of certain drug regimens. Second line, third line drugs, and some clients were on first line. So on second line, we are talking of over 40,000 heart clients will be affected. You know, our drugs, you know, they come in combination, depending on where you are with your status.
There have been reports of shortages of ARVs and antibiotics in health centers around the country. The government says it has managed to pay US $2 million toward the grant.
So what we need to now see is that committee, the portfolio committee, taking action.
The Zimbabwe Health Ministry says 8,000 new patients start using ARVs each month. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
Still in Zimbabwe, government workers, including public prosecutors, say they are being squeezed by inflation, which is now running at an annual rate of 175%. Some have asked to live in their places of work to cut down on the cost of rent and transportation. Columbus Mavunga reports for VOA from Harare.
31-year-old Munyaradzi Masiwa is a high school teacher in Harare. Masiwa says he went into the profession because he admired his teachers growing up and saw them living in nice houses and driving nice cars. But now he says he has lost all motivation because his salary of less than $30 per month is not enough to support his five dependents, including his 75-year-old mother and two children. This month, he says, the money lasted only 3 days.
I'm going to work right now. I've just got porridge. I cannot afford to buy a loaf of bread. It's very difficult. It's very difficult to get used to the situation. The family is looking up to me. I have nothing to offer. on the table. The kids are going to school. Nothing to eat.
The Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions has warned of possible strikes unless the government of President Emmerson Mnangagwa does something to arrest inflation. Masiwa, however, says he believes a strike will just bring a heavy-handed government response.
There is no hope, absolutely. There is no hope. If we try to demonstrate or to organize strikes, we are being tortured. We are being abducted. So it's becoming difficult. We no longer have hope. When we cannot organize ourselves, even to negotiate with the government, they already know the situation we are in.
Energy Mutodi, Zimbabwe's junior information minister, says the government is aware of the workers' concerns and is taking steps to address them.
We need the people to be patient. We are coming from many years of economic stagnation, and that must be known. And that needs to then be corrected through a long process of correcting our economic fundamentals. And that is happening.
The government's austerity for prosperity program has resulted in reduced expenditures and a rare budget surplus in recent months, but also it cuts down on subsidies for essentials such as electricity and fuel. For Masiwa and other workers like him, that means more days of no electricity, not enough food, and no clean tap water. Workers in various government departments have sought permission to live at their workplace, even in courtrooms, to cut on transport and rent costs. The government has dismissed the requests as the work of the opposition. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011 and we'll get back to you. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. We're going to leave you with the song Bankalad by P Square.
Oh, no, no, no. Aye, yeah. Girl, it's up to you. What are you afraid to say? I do say. Aye, yeah. Go tell your papa. Say that me, they come for you. Hey, yo, go, go. Today na today, and when I finish, you go no send me. As you dare the delay to prove my loving, you must chop my money, yeah. Cause my bank alerts na bagam, my check in all the bounce, my mansion on na badam, baby take a look around. My bank alerts na bagam, my check in all the bounce, my mansion on na badam, make you take a look around. Hey. Aye, yeah. Girl, it's up to you, what are you afraid to say? I do say, aye, yeah.
We've been listening to Peace Square with the song Bankalat. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Like play, the person we want to feel run the back to stay. Say I declare, say we can love with this. They don't know how I feel. Baby, say something, make me do something, something. Yeah, let me hear you say I do. Baby, say something.